This is the PropTech VC Podcast. We give you unique insights into how innovative technologies are disrupting real estate. We interview top entrepreneurs, investors, and knowledgeable experts to share the inside scoop in this fast-moving industry. It's hosted by leading PropTech VC, Zane Jaffer. Let's dive into today's content.
Let's have a bit of a debate before we round off the conversation. And I'm a prop tech guy, so I'm biased. I'm very ambitious. I really believe technology is going to eat prop tech completely, that the old guard is going to, you know, be disrupted. But I also have some doubts, and let's talk about them. At what point does it really make sense for the mass market to invest in commercial real estate? Surely it's irresponsible. Surely you should first try to buy your own primary home. Shouldn't commercial real estate be the only be available to institutional investors? Shouldn't only be available to people once they reach a certain minimum threshold? Surely that's why the accredited investor status exists. Well, what's your thoughts? And, you know, again, I don't necessarily believe what I'm saying, but it's an interesting debate that I'd love to have with you as an expert.
Yeah, of course. So yeah, I actually see it differently. You know, within commercial real estate, first of all, we have the entire multifamily sector. And I think that investing in multifamily is even more stable and even a better, you know, less risky investment than purchasing an house or condo by yourself.
And yeah, but let me try to pin you down for a second, okay? Are you telling me if a consumer has the choice between renting and then turning that rent into a home they own, that they live in, versus renting, continuing to rent, and instead taking the money they would have spent on their own primary home and buying commercial real estate, is a better decision?
I think so. In some cases, really depends where you live. It really depends on, but definitely, yes. I think that in some areas, you definitely can rent a house and live in this rented house, and take the money and leverage it in multiple other investment, where some of them are multifamilies, residential, that are producing, you know, distributions, rent. Other ones are value-add project with a little bit less, more of a risk, but more of an upside. And I think that once again, the discovery will be more accessible and there will be more transparency. And I think this is where, when we'll see more of these investors and people, you know, spending their money to. I think one of the big problems today, if iBar wants to invest in some multifamily or some commercial real estate, and I approach some sort of a company that my friend just recommended me to, and I come into their office and I sit with them and ask them, you know, what's your track record? Can you share with me a little bit of your experience? How many deals have you managed? What's your average cash on cash, IRR? Who knows what they tell me? You know, they can tell me anything. Who knows if they tell me, you know, who knows? And so I think once everything will be more standardized and transparent, and then I think it will be easier for people to make the right decisions. And I do think that there are some, you know, there are investment professionals that can invest my money better than I can invest in the specific property that I want to live in, because investing and living in a place doesn't necessarily need to be the same thing.
Fascinating. Why are we drilled into our heads that the best investment you can make is your own home?
I think, again, it's something in our DNA, in nature. Our mother told us that when we were very, you know, young. Stability, you know, we have your own space. It's more stable. It's more, it feels like, you know, it feels like the better and more, let's say, cautioned choice. But I don't really see it this way.
Yeah. Look, again, I confess, I mean, the spirit of having a debate, I 100% agree with you, even though I want to poke holes in this. But even in my case, I rented forever. Even after having an exit, I continued to rent. But I had so much money in real estate projects, and you know, I did end up buying in San Francisco when the market was down. But that wasn't the calculus. There was not, this is better than renting. It was more that I feel like we're getting it at a good price. I feel like there's a good resale value. I feel that if I wanted to turn this to a short-term commercial rental later on, it would pay off long-term. And it would be a good investment. So I also looked at it as an investment first. And that's very tricky to do, because if you're looking at your primary home as an investment, usually you have to give on something, right? What makes something a good investment usually makes it a terrible place to live in. I love the place I live in, of course. I wouldn't have you know, done that otherwise. But I remember one of my advisors telling me, you know, you need to be very specific. If you're looking for it as an investment, then, you know, look at it very differently versus as something you want to live in. And that's why the residential market and the investment market are very, very different. When you're looking at the investment market, you know, you have to be very cost conscious about everything inside the building, every piece of amenity and furniture and infrastructure. Whereas if it's residential, you can splurge on those bathroom tiles, you can build a, you know, beautiful indoor pool or whatever you want to build if you're at that level, right? Or, you know, in this case, it might be a nice garden. Those things don't necessarily pay off. In the investment world, it's about NOI. Does this improve NOI? Now, going back to the debate, though, I think happiness is something that shouldn't be traded. You know, you need to love where you live. I feel like you become like the people you surround yourself with. I think it's also the same for the home you live in, too. The home you live in should make you happy. And that's hard to 100%. Quantify. That's hard to quantify. But does that mean you should put 99% of your net worth in your home? Sounds insane, doesn't it, right?
Yeah.
Look, if you're the type of person that wants to really values that and can see yourself living there for 30 years, by all means, I think it's great, you know? And there's a pride. For some people, it's a pride. It's like this, okay? I'll give you the psychological example. I had all my net worth concentrated in one startup stock. That feels very different than having the same net worth but concentrated across numerous assets. For some people, there's pride in knowing, I can touch this, I can live in this, I can do what the hell I want with it because I live here, damn it, right? And I own this place.
Yeah.
And there's that feeling to it too. It's like why I like investing in startups. Although I invest in venture funds too, I like investing in startups because, you know, I can talk to the founder, I can enjoy it, right? It's the same here for this investment. You don't get that when you invest in commercial real estate. And you certainly don't want to offer that, do you? I don't think a commercial real estate investor wants a bunch of non-accredited investors bugging them all the time, right?
Right.
But I mean, there's nothing to debate about that. That's a fact.
I think you got it right. I think it's much more of, again, you know, the happiness and the feeling than, you know, than what the brain really tells you that you need to do.
Absolutely. Now, one last question for you that I love to ask people in the investment space. What do you recommend people do regarding their portfolio allocation and diversification? How much percentage of their net worth should be in cash? How much of it should be in stocks and bonds? How much of it should be in real estate? And that's really the key question. How much in real estate? And you're biased. You run an investment management platform, but what do you truly believe?
I'll tell you what. First, I want to say, you know, when I don't know something enough, I like to say it up front. I'm not a professional in this specific manner, so you know, it's only my opinion. Let's say it like that.
Viewers appreciate the candy. You know, being candid. Disclaimers aside, what do you recommend?
You know, I think it's in today's atmosphere, I think holding cash, especially dollars, won't be the right decision with all the printing that the Fed is doing. And, you know, I live in Israel, right? So I have Israeli shekels. And I see, you know, I think that as a U.S., you know, when you live in the U.S., I don't think you recognize it, but I see it every day. I see how the dollar went from $1 was worth 3.85, 9 even, a couple of months ago, Israeli shekels. Today, it's worth 3.2. Okay, so look at this significant reduce in the dollar's price. So this is one thing. I think that investing in stocks, I'm a big believer not in ETFs or S&P or something. I'm a big believer in investing only in things that you really believe in, understanding. I don't think you need a portfolio of more than 5 to 6 stocks. So I think a big portion should be in the stock market, although I think the prices today are extremely high. So I'm personally waiting.
That probably implies why you might think the index isn't worth doing and going more in a concentrated concentrating more in a portfolio of maybe five, six stocks is what you're saying. So if you have 100% bucket, right, how much in cash, how much in stocks, and how much in other asset classes, and how much in real estate?
I'll put 20% in cash, or even 15%.
Yeah.
And then FF, real estate, and stocks. Stocks, because I'm a big believer also in, you know, specific companies. I don't see it as a stock. I see it as a companies.
Yeah.
Companies. With a good founding team, with a good, a vision and business model. And then real estate, where you can actually leverage your money, take on debt and leverage it. So I think 40%, 20%.
Okay, thank you. 40, 40, 20. I'm surprised I'm not hearing cryptocurrency. I'm not hearing gold and silver, given the U.S. is...
because we talked about this video, right? You should also have cryptocurrency, maybe 40, 40, 10 and 10.
10 and 10. So 10 is crypto, 10 is cash, right? Because having cash by virtue means, you know, it's depreciating in value because of the Fed printing all these dollars. And inflation and interest rates being so low, you're actually being penalized by keeping cash. All right, well, I appreciate that.
Being completely honest, right, but this is only me and I'm taking on risk. I'm a young person. I don't have yet a family, so I have the ability to take on this risk. My portfolio, about 80% of my capital is in cryptocurrencies.
In cryptocurrencies, not in real estate.
80% of, yes. Yes, but this is only a thing of in the next, let's say, 1 year. I think so far it was very successful in the past.
And it's probably higher than it is just as a virtue of crypto blowing up so quickly, right? It's like, you know, this is why pension funds have to rebalance their portfolios. Otherwise, they get too overweight in stocks or too overweight in bonds, depending on what's going on in the market. Right. So, you know, I agree. And obviously, the real answer is, disclaimers, you know, put out there. This is not investment advice. Make that very clear. And it depends on your circumstance and also the amount of money you're putting in. I think if you only have, it's really hard to use dollar amounts because such a global world we live in today, right? A dollar in San Francisco is very different to a dollar in Tel Aviv, which is very different to a dollar in Nigeria, right? But if we just assume you have $100,000, I don't think you should have any business investing in, you know, stocks or bonds. Keep that in cash in case there's a bad situation coming, you know, and keep that available. If you're in the $500,000 to $1 million range, well, actually, let's say $100,000 to $500,000, because we skipped that category. That's when I think you can start to take a diversified approach. But I think having a larger concentration of cash is important, or having securities you can borrow against. Is pretty key too. And I think at this stage, you know, you're not really able to, you have no negotiation ability. You're not managing enough money. If it's your own money, especially, it's so small that you can really afford to only either, you know, put a down payment in your own home and own your own home, or maybe use a platform like Agora and make a few specific investments for a higher IRR. I think when you start to get to the $1 million plus range, 500 to million, a million to, you know, beyond, that's when you can start to really take a diversified approach, where you should have some in early stage companies, you should have some in you know, stocks, and perhaps a little bit of bonds, a little bit of crypto, a little bit of or actually a lot more in real estate. I mean, that's what I believe and preach, you know. So that's truly what it comes down to, is sort of this amount of money you have and what that money means to you. If you've got lifestyle costs, forget it. Like, don't put too much money into startups at all. That's too risky. And if you do it, be willing to lose everything. I also don't agree, Byron. I think when you said invest in 5 to 6 companies with founding teams, I think you were referring to public, large established companies where there are protections in place for investors. I don't think you were referring to startups, right? Because 5 to 6, I would argue, is...
Oh, stock market, of course. Yeah. Of course.
5 to 6, you should assume you're going to lose 100% of your money, just to be brutally, you know, frank there. If you're like at 10 to 20 startups, then I think you can count on 1 or 2 returning back. And, you know, the gold standard in this asset class is return 3x over a decade. So, you know, you should be able to make your money back if you have at least 10 to 20 startups. But if you have 6, it's just too much risk.
And no, completely agree. Yeah. Definitely.
But public companies
in the stock market, public companies, of course.
Public companies, 6 is all you need. And I think, do you know who it was? It was a famous financial investment guru. I don't know which one of the great investment gurus said this, but also believes that having six good companies beats the ETFs any days.
I think it's from the Intelligence Investor on the book.
That's right. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Exactly. Great. Well, Bar, this was a fun conversation about the Israeli tech ecosystem, about your story, about blockchain, and also in the end, a fun debate about whether you should own your home or whether you should invest in another asset. So I appreciate that a lot. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for the opportunity.